Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Devin.
Do you like how I really just like...
enunciated?
I enunciate, but I also do like a sort of dramatic, like,
yes.
I'm Sarah.
Yeah, you do. It's really interesting.
That's sort of my inspo.
Also, I've been trying to like be more energetic when I do the lead-in.
Yeah, I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast, but sometimes Devin and I give each other constructive feedback.
Yeah.
Y'all give us constructive feedback, yeah. And then we parlay that onto each other.
That's true.
And I told Devin at one point, I felt like such a... like sexist almost. I was like, it would really help if you smiled when you did the lead in because it sounds more enthusiastic. Because that is actually advice that I've been given for like phone interviews.
Yeah,
it's like if you smile, you actually sound more excited and passionate and like all those good things.
Well, what's on your face always comes out in your tone.
But I felt like such a dude being like, you should smile for me.
Smile more. You have such a pretty smile.
Yes, yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah.
Well, and we're back in together form.
I know. It's twice like, in a row.
I know.
We did it last week when we had our pantsuit politics crossover, which was so much fucking fun.
I loved it.
That was so fun.
So fun.
They're really smart. They really leveled up the nuance.
They really did.
We brought the cursing. They brought the nuance. It was a great marriage, I think.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I always feel like the Wonder Twins when we get together, like with our powers combined, we take over the world.
We have a podcast and we talk some shit on Trump and Republicans and occasionally left-leaning dudes.
You know, to mix it up.
We just really cover the spectrum of mansplainers.
We do.
And dickwads.
Okay, so let's go over what we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
So first we're going to do listener feedback and some updates, as always. Then block two is we're going to talk about Puerto Rico and what's going on there. And we're also going to talk about North Korea.
Yep.
It is a scary motherfucker of a story.
Yeah. There's so much going on with our international relations based on, you know, that speech that Trump gave at the UN, UNGA that we couldn't even really delve into.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a whole fucking, you know, humanitarian crisis happening in Puerto Rico that Trump isn't even fucking talking about.
I don't even know.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
The president isn't talking about it, but we're fucking
talking
about it.
We're going to talk about it. And then block three, we're going to talk about the NFL and the take a knee sort of protests that happened yesterday and what they were doing and why and sort of putting that in a larger context. And then obviously what Trump's response was, which, spoiler alert, it's dickwaddish.
Yeah. I mean, he's the one who... We'll get into it. Because, you know, this protest has been happening for a while.
Right.
It started with Colin Kaepernick, and it got back into the spotlight because of comments Trump made at a rally on Friday. So we'll get into that. Again, like Devin said, spoiler alert, Trump is full of shit.
Yeah.
What else is new?
Yeah. So then block four is our gratitude check. Sorely needed, always, especially when we're talking about North Korea. Just saying.
Especially when we're talking about Trump.
Trump
Let's
in
just,
general.
That is fair. Like, that is just the...
No, that's a good point.
The center of a lot of political problems right now.
It's true. And then block five, it's Monday. So we're doing Dick One of the Week. And oh boy. There are two losers this week because I refuse to give either one of them like the dishonorable mention.
Oh, yeah.
Like, underneath. I was like, no.
They're on par with each other.
Yeah.
And because this administration is such a hot fucking trash fire, these stories have been kind of below the radar.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about it.
As always.
Yeah, we're like, people, like, the president isn't talking about Puerto Rico. We're going to fucking talk about Puerto Rico. There's not a lot of people talking about these dickwads. We're going to talk about these dickwads.
And then finally, we've got action items. So something you can do after you listen to the show. Okay, Sarah, so let's get into some listener feedback and general updates. So what do we have?
So Manda tweeted us and she said, "Hey, Hellbent, thanks for helping me find Pantsuit Politics. Love having a new political podcast hosted by women in my feed."
Yeah, that's amazing.
And yeah, they're awesome.
They are.
I've been listening to them for the past few months and I really, really love the discussions they have. And, you know, we talked about it on the podcast, but Beth is sort of this principled conservative and a lot of the things she says, I end up finding myself agreeing with.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of exciting.
Yeah.
And like Sarah said, there are more Beths than you would think. It's just you know, the modern day Republican Party, and certainly this so-called president slash occupant of the White House,
right,
Donald motherfucking Trump, is not representative of any of that.
Right. Well, and, you know, it's also really interesting. They said radical moderate,
yeah,
which I really liked. And yeah, and part of their point of their podcast was the fact that there is more overlap in beliefs.
If reasonable people can talk, right, and exactly, they can come from like principled places.
Right. At the very least, there's more understanding of where the other person is coming from.
It also doesn't surprise me that it's two women
who
are finding that common ground, because we're sort of socialized to collaborate and, you know,
right,
build good teams. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
So we love talking to Pantsuit Politics, and we're excited to go on their show.
Yeah. And then Janet tweeted, loved hearing all the y'alls today on Hellbent. I love that too. So they are legitimately from Kentucky and say y'all.
Yeah.
I say y'all because Friends is weird for me.
I like Friends, but I was initially skeptical about a California girl like myself,
right,
saying y'all, but I was convinced by enough people that, right, it is a really just good alternative in general to you guys.
I like it.
You know, it's okay if you're from California, you can use y'all. So I have warmed up to y'all.
Yeah.
And I like it a lot.
I like it too.
And I will also say we did get a lot of really great feedback from Beth's gratitude check in particular.
Yes.
About that article on the heroin epidemic from, I believe she said, the Cincinnati Inquirer.
Yes.
So I think a lot of people really appreciated that.
It's an amazing article. I read it after we spoke on Thursday. And
yeah,
it is difficult to read, but worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we got an email from Meg. So yes, what did she say, Devin?
So she said, I'm catching up on yesterday's podcast, and I'm lovingly calling you in, Devin and Sarah. The SMNTY podcast uses calling in, which is more learn with me than calling out you've done a bad thing.
And that's like a whole other thing I feel like,
yes,
we could do like a Patreon episode about, because
yes,
our friend Caitlin Burns, who we've interviewed on the podcast, she has a whole written series for Everyday Feminism,
right,
about calling in versus calling out, how call out culture can get toxic, like,
right,
it's still necessary in some places, but that calling in is like a different tactic. Like you sort of approach someone privately.
Right.
That's a whole other subtopic that we could do. But I love, true, that she used this,
yeah,
term.
It's a really
in.
Good term. And so she goes on, I honestly don't care if Martha Stewart said it. The whole pumpkin spice is for basic bitches shtick is frankly borderline misogynistic. You don't see people calling out a love of bacon in the same way. I'm not a basic bitch if I love bacon or overpopped IPAs or whiskey, all popular with the male contingent. The piling on pumpkin spice, which is largely enjoyed by women, and not the others I noted, which are perceived as a male thing, is sexist and illogical. Love the show otherwise. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that we did sort of participate in this. And I've definitely heard this.
Yeah.
That sort of this whole idea of basic bitch has all these sort of underlying misogynistic sort of
connotations.
Yeah. And actually there was a great article in The Cut from a couple of years ago, and the writer said, quote, so the woman who calls another woman basic ends up implicitly endorsing two things she probably wouldn't sign up for if they were spelled out for her. One, a male hierarchy of culture, and two, the belief that the self is an essentially surface level formation. So
right,
like what you consume, what you like, what you buy.
Right.
I mean, people aren't when people call someone a basic bitch, they're not criticizing consumer culture overall.
Right. Just the, your form of consumer culture.
Just what that sort of is supposed to say about you. And
right,
so I think that Meg makes a really good point.
She absolutely does.
What I will say is I also believe that there is a power in subversively owning something that is,
right,
meant to be an insult.
Right.
So I feel like there's a sense of self-deprecation there that I think you can play with,
right,
and sort of, you know, use language to fight back,
yes,
against those things. I don't think that's what I did in the last episode.
Right.
So I think Meg was right. I think she was right to call that out. Like there was a little bit of internalized misogyny and like cool girl, like, oh, I don't like pumpkin spice.
Right.
Which I really don't.
Right.
But like trying.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So
yeah,
I think that was a really good call in.
Yeah,
Meg.
I loved that. So thank you so much for reaching out. And to your point, Sarah, I do believe that there's power in reclaiming language, which I think we both do in sort of like our bios where we call ourselves feminist bitches.
Yeah. I think I call myself an angry feminist,
yeah,
bitch.
Yeah, exactly. And, or, you know, sort of like claiming this like angry feminist, bitchy, like overbearing thing and kind of reclaiming it and saying like, sure,
yep,
I'm that.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Like if a guy calls me a bitch, I want to be like, yeah, you're
Thank
right.
You.
I'm the biggest bitch you'll ever meet.
Exactly.
But so I do think
on board.
Megan was right to call in this instance.
I agree.
Of how we use it. Me specifically, I'm going to own that. So
No. And I mean, I said it too, and I also don't like pumpkin spice, but gingerbread lattes are my jam. My jam. I'm obsessed.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into some updates. So on Saturday, September 30th, is that this coming weekend?
That is this coming weekend.
I've lost track of days.
Me too. Who knows?
So it's this coming Saturday. Devin is participating in International Podcast Day because she's a fancy podcast lady. So it's an event that brings together 24 podcasts and does one per hour. So it's kind of like a live thing for a whole day. So she's going to be interviewing fellow Hellion, Lindsay, who works in podcast advertising. And she's
also kind of my bestie.
Yeah, she's awesome. So they'll be discussing being women in podcasting, sort of both in front of the mic and behind the scenes.
Right.
What the podcast community is doing and how podcasting has changed lives.
Right. And how it's changed our life.
Yeah.
Like specifically, and how it's really shaped our careers and everything. So listen in on Saturday, September 30th at 7 p.m. PST, so Pacific Standard Time. It'll be streaming live, so you could ask questions and have them answered during the show. And you can go to internationalpodcastday.com for more information and see the speaker lineup. There's lots of really cool, really interesting speakers.
I'm totally going to troll you. I'm going to ask so many fucking questions. Like, what do you think about your co-host?
Yeah, right? Hi.
No, but like, honestly.
But like, honestly.
I don't think she's listening.
Yeah. I love that. Also, so we missed out on September's newsletter, which is on me.
Devin has been picking up all the slack that I have not been able to contribute. So a little, some things are going to fall by the wayside. Yeah. That's totally fine.
Yeah, I just didn't have the bandwidth for it.
Totally fair.
Yeah. So we are sending out the October newsletter next week, though. So you can sign up at hellbentpodcast.com/newsletter if you haven't already. It's a fun newsletter. We swear a lot, which is super surprising.
It's so weird. It's so off-brand.
But yeah, so we will be sending that out next week. Also, we will be going on Pantsuit Politics' show on their show. That's October 10th. So stay tuned and get excited. It's going to be a really great show.
Yeah, we're really excited to get on their show.
Mm-hmm.
And try to be more nuanced.
just so nuanced. Yeah,
just as much swearing though.
Exactly. And we're already started kind of researching the episode. It's going to be really great.
Yeah. Also, we're really blown away by our generous Patreon sponsors and supporters. So as we do every month, we'll be shouting out the $10 plus patrons next week. So if you'd like to be on this list or if you'd like to contribute and support our work, you can do so at patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. And we've been teasing this for a little bit, but both of us are almost done with Hillary
so
Clinton's
close.
Book. I have 15 minutes left in my audiobook.
Yeah.
So we will be doing a special bonus podcast just dedicated to what happened.
Yep.
Within the next week or two.
Yes.
That's sort of our goal.
That's our goal. And so, yeah, come for the discussion on Hillary's book, and you can stay for my tipsy thoughts on whether or not Bill secretly writes for my Russian conspiracy fan fiction blog. He does. So.
I will also say, too, if you pledge $5 or more on Patreon, that gives you access to that kind of content.
Right.
The $10 level is when you also get a shout out on our show.
Right.
So just FYI, if you want to get in on that Hillary episode and a whole backlog of other bonus podcasts, we have close to 30.
Yes.
Then support us for $5 or more on patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. Okay, Devin, so let's get into our first big news block. We want to talk about Puerto Rico first and what's going on with the hurricane and sort of the ensuing humanitarian crisis. Then we'll switch over to, you know, North Korea and how Trump is probably going to start a nuclear war on Twitter. So, like, cool. I guess. But let's start with Puerto Rico, because that hasn't been getting as much attention as it merits.
Right.
So what's the deal there?
Right. So Puerto Rico is in bad shape. Hurricane Maria touched down on the island on Thursday, September 21st.
Yeah. So last week,
at least 13 are dead and there's no official injury count. Since there is such widespread damage and chaos, rescue efforts are stunted, and it is difficult to assess the full extent of the human and property damage at this point.
Yeah,
so we just don't know.
We don't know, but just as a reference point, there are 3.4 million Americans currently living in Puerto Rico.
Right.
And, you know, on top of that, the power grid is completely down.
Yes.
And they don't even know when it's going to be back up. Like, there are estimates in the months.
Yeah.
And so that affects everything, like trying to get cash from an ATM, using a cell phone. There's no cell service, which has made communication between local officials and citizens very hard.
Mm-hmm. You don't realize how much you rely on the power grid and cell phone towers and communications until it's down. It's really scary. You know, there's been a dearth of response from the U.S. government.
That is the most disturbing thing to me about this.
Yeah,
Puerto Rico. There are some logistical reasons why. So what are some of the logistical reasons why it's sort of hard?
Right. Well, Puerto Rico is an island, and because of this power outage and the extensive damage to ports and airports, getting supplies there physically is actually just difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they're there, getting them, like, spread it, like, dispersing them and spreading the stuff out. I mean, a lot of roads are blocked. You know, a lot of people are, there's a lot of rubble. They don't know where a lot of people are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a logistical, you know, kind of nightmare.
Right. I will say, so that's a super interesting note. I will say the lack of urgency from government officials.
Oh yeah.
I feel like is stunning. Mm-hmm. Although not totally surprising, because there's definitely a colonial and a racial element there.
Yeah, because it's a U.S. territory, but we've always had a very complicated relationship with Puerto Rico. This kind of lack of response, like Sarah said, is not super surprising. Like, we kind of treat it like
an afterthought.
Yeah.
I feel like federal officials are treating it like an afterthought,
right,
and it shouldn't be. And again, like Devin said, there's a very complicated relationship. There's a lot of sort of colonialism and I think racism in the lack of response. And I will say, you know, we talked about how Trump hasn't tweeted about it.
No.
He hasn't talked about it.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, there are people trying to get out from airports. There are elderly citizens who are without power and are suffering and are not able to get the care they need. You know, in sort of on top of all the things that we've already discussed that are happening.
The shit icing on the shit cake, as it were.
So there's a dam called Lake Guacataca that has ruptured.
Right.
And there's been a lot of really urgent warnings from the National Weather Service saying it will probably collapse.
Right.
And it will affect up to 70,000 people.
Yeah.
And because the power grid has been compromised, sort of local officials in Puerto Rico aren't able to communicate with citizens like they would in any other
emergency,
sort of natural disaster,
right,
where the power grid hasn't been compromised. So they're literally going, like, house to house trying to warn people. Like,
and to get them to evacuate.
Because they can't, you know, they'll put out things, you know, on their websites or on Twitter or like through the news. But if people aren't getting electricity, they're not going to be able to see it on their phones or on their TVs.
Right. Yeah. So the damage in Puerto Rico is extensive and terrifying. And in addition to all of the, you know, sort of immediate crises and the immediate problems that they have, you know, this is really going to damage Puerto Rico in the long run. According to one report by the New York Times, they have lost 80% of their crop value.
Wow.
Which is, you know, their main export. It's going to be very difficult for Puerto Rico to rebound from this. And so while there is definitely an immediate crisis, this is going to be a long, long process. And I'm not just talking about getting the power grid back up. Just getting the whole island back on its feet is going to be tough.
For me too, the fact that there's been so many hurricanes, and then there was that big earthquake in Mexico City.
Yeah.
Just in, you know, in a very short span of time, really highlights the urgency of climate change.
Yes.
Because it's not like climate change is bringing about these natural disasters,
no,
but I think it's making it more likely and it's exacerbating the effects.
Yeah. And just in general, you know, the way we treat our environment, what you put in comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I talked to Melissa McEwen about this when she was guest hosting with me.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked a lot about climate change and how Scott Pruitt doesn't want to talk about it and all these other things. And so I also think that it's an urgent thing. I know there's 1 million things going on, but I do think we, like, climate change and these sort of natural disasters need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I was listening to that episode. She talked about how different our country and our world might be had Al Gore won the presidency, because
right.
he was, you know, very loudly talking about climate change and very urgently wanting to address it.
Right.
I also think it's important, and we sort of alluded to this, but to note that while Trump has been tweeting up a storm about professional athletes and the anthem and the flag, there have been zero tweets about Puerto Rico and the ongoing crisis there. And also, in all their free time, what have they done? What has the Trump administration done?
Well, they've Kevin? Managed to add a few more countries and harsher provisions to the original travel ban.
Yeah.
Just on top of everything else. So in addition to the 6 majority Muslim countries in the original travel ban, he's added Chad, Venezuela, North Korea. So cool.
Yeah. I mean, like, they're trying to take healthcare away. He's tweeting about fucking, you know, kneeling for the anthem and, like, just all this stuff. And then also, you know, has not paid any attention to Puerto Rico.
Right.
But they've managed to, you know, do more, you know, in sort of institute more racist policies that,
right.
that are not bounded in any kind of truth or common sense, that
right.
don't help the national security of the country, that are just fucking bullshit.
They're bullshit.
That is something...
Water wet. Trump, it's time for bullshit.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's something we wanted to talk about.
Yes.
And it's a story we're going to be keeping close tabs on. We'll have some action items in regards to Puerto Rico at the end of the show.
Yes.
Let's transition to North Korea.
Yes.
So what's been going on with our relations with North Korea?
I mean, you say relations, but that's a bad word for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because it doesn't even describe what the fuck is happening.
It's so unprecedented, and I hate that word, especially in this day and age, but it's just such a weird...
It's true.
It's just so weird what's going on. So basically, Trump and, you know, North Korean officials have been kind of trading barbs in
yeah.
a very, like, disgusting and schoolyard kind of way.
Well, and this sort of continues this trend, which has been sort of developing for months.
Right.
Right? Like, this isn't coming out of nowhere. It's like Trump is egging North Korea on.
Oh, 100%.
He's been doing that, you know, since even before he was president.
Absolutely.
But he's certainly been doing it a lot now.
Oh, yeah. And so all of this talking has been leading to, like, real violence, mm-hmm. of course. That's how it works, right? So at his UN GA speech, Trump called Kim Jong-un a, quote, rocket man on a suicide mission, and said that he would, quote, totally destroy North Korea. So in response...
Which, can we just...
Yeah,
for
I'm
going
to gloss... I tried just, to gloss over that.
But. For a second, can we just acknowledge how fucking dangerous and absurd
yes.
and disgusting that is to say he's going to wipe off the map of an entire country?
Of just people, of...
Just because he feels like acting like a fucking... Man-child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that we've had some pushback on that word, but, like,
no,
I just feel like that's what a fucking...
Toddler.
Like, someone who just acts out does.
Yeah, absolutely. So in response to this, North Korea's foreign minister, Ri Yong-ho, said that Trump will pay dearly for that statement.
Quote-unquote, pay dearly.
He also said that it is Trump on the suicide mission.
Oh my gosh, this is like, I know you are who you are, but what am I?
Yeah,
like,
basically.
Rubber glue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so Trump decided that the proper response to this would be tweeting.
Oh gosh. At Jack, if you're listening, just shut down
just
his fucking Twitter
fuck
account.
Down.
I mean, it's not going to solve the root problem, but, like, holy shit.
Jesus. So this is, I'm going to quote this tweet. I hate quoting Donald Trump's tweets on the show, but this one I feel like gives some ridiculous context. He said, quote, just heard foreign minister of North Korea speak at UN. If he echoes thoughts of little rocket man, they won't be around much longer.
Oh my fucking God. Can we talk too about how a bunch of Trump officials sort of on background were like, he thought of that little rocket man. He thought of that all on his own. Like, he's a master at branding. I'm like, bitch, this is not, he's not
no.
some marketing executive.
No.
Like, he's the fucking, he's supposed to be the president. Like,
yeah.
You can't just fucking say shit like this.
That is not branding. That is taunting.
Yeah.
Like, he's a master of taunting, which is not something that you should be proud of.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
And then in response, Kim Jong-un called Trump a, quote, mentally deranged U.S. dotard.
And that's a real word.
That's a real word.
Merriam-Webster had a whole tweet about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep, searches for this word are up. It's a totally real word. Yeah. I think it means something like senile and like old.
And frail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean,
okay.
When you find yourself sort of agreeing with Kim Jong-un.
Yeah. Like, look at your life and look at your choices.
Like, what's happening?
What's happening? And then, and this is where all this talk starts to get physical. So the U.S. flew Air Force B-1B Lancer bombers and F-15C Eagle fighter escorts to international airspace over the waters east of North Korea. And Pentagon spokesperson Dana White said, quote, "This is the farthest of the demilitarized zone any U.S. fighter or bomber aircraft have flown off North Korea's coast in the 21st century. This mission is a demonstration of U.S. resolve and a clear message that the president has many military options to defeat any threat." And they say this like they're proud of this behavior.
It's so, this is really disturbing. And Hillary Clinton has talked about this in her interviews, you know, in promoting her book, because she gets asked about sort of like what's happening, like the topics du jour.
Right.
And, you know, what she was saying with North Korea, she's like, this, you know, us bombing each other is the worst case scenario.
Right.
No one wants us to get to there. Right. You have to lead with diplomacy. You can't lead with threats of violence.
Right.
That's not going to help anyone. But that's not what Trump is doing. And certainly people in his administration are only enabling
right.
that.
So actually, Steve Mnuchin, who, since when does the Secretary of the Treasury comment on foreign affairs? I'm not sure. This is weird, but he said, quote, "The president doesn't want to be in a nuclear war, and we will do everything we can to make sure that doesn't occur. On the other hand," kill me, "the president will protect the American people and our allies."
So he's really saying, he's like, but really, we're going to lead with strength,
right,
which is not what you should be doing with North Korea.
No.
Like, and also, I will add that on top of all this sort of these crises of international relations that could lead to a sort of a nuclear war very easily, the State Department has been totally gutted.
Oh.
And that's kind of an underreported story. Like, they haven't filled enough top positions. People are leaving. Like, the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, doesn't even want this job.
Right.
So that's also concerning, that we don't have enough people in the department that is supposed to handle diplomacy.
Yeah, and I don't think that's an accident. I don't think that that's just a big coincidence. I think the gutting of the State Department is important context for what's going on now.
Yeah.
And because diplomacy has always been our policy. And so the stark reversal of that policy in conjunction with the gutting of the State Department.
Yeah, I mean, I think with North Korea, it's diplomacy first, right?
Like, right, that's what I meant.
The presence of nuclear weapons on both ends is sort of like a signal of strength.
Right.
And like, if you push us far enough, you know what we're capable of. And no one wants to get to that point.
Right.
No one wins.
Right.
Literally everyone loses.
Yeah.
And so Trump sort of just running his mouth. Again, I want to get that fucking Hillary Clinton tweet tattooed on my forehead.
Right.
A man you can bait with a tweet is not a man you can trust with nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
I'm like, hello.
Yes.
This is why he should never have been one of the biggest reasons.
Right.
Among a list of.
There's a whole list.
Thousand reasons. But
you
one
can
of
literally
the biggest.
Pick your own adventure with that one.
Like, do we want him making the call on nukes? He's been, and as Sarah Kendzior has documented, Trump has had a decades-long obsession with nuclear weapons.
Yes.
He's talked about sort of his desire to use them. And
right.
So this is like a very real thing. Not to sound alarmist, but it's very, you know, it's very dangerous situation.
Well, and to take a slight left turn for a hot second, the Secretary of the Department of Energy is Rick Perry, who has no...
I forget about Rick Perry.
Right.
Which kind of scares me.
Yeah. So he's the Secretary of the Department that oversees the nuclear program. And Rick Perry has no business being in that position.
Nope.
So it's just all of these things, like he's creating this sort of triangle of, you know, people around him who are enabling this sort of behavior.
Incompetence and ignorance.
Yes.
And a penchant for bullying.
Exactly. So after Trump's little tweet outburst, and I just had to say that in real life, our president had a Twitter outburst.
Yeah.
Pyongyang held an anti-US rally. So Pyongyang is the capital of North Korea. And I honestly don't even blame them. Like, what? Like, okay. So it's just tens of thousands of people showed up in the anti-U.S. rally in Kim Il-sung Square. And there were signs such as, quote, "death to the American imperialists" and calls for, quote, "total destruction."
Yeah. So Trump and his behavior, he's only ginning up sort of this race, yes, you know, to possibly use nuclear weapons against each other. Yeah. And I honestly am scared as to what's going to happen, because this is definitely a serious situation. And, you know, there doesn't seem to be enough of a meaningful check on right. someone like Trump
right.
to stop him yeah. from possibly putting us all in fucking danger.
Right. Like you said, yeah, this Congress is not acting as a check as it's supposed to. And so if all of that weren't terrifying enough, because, you know, let's really wake you up on this Monday. Mm-hmm. Seismologists detected a minor earthquake near the spot where North Korea conducted its most powerful and recent nuclear test.
Oh, wow.
And so this has led to speculation that Pyongyang could be conducting another weapons test.
Yeah, so lots to digest here. Again, this is a story we're going to keep close tabs on, because it only seems to be escalating and escalating, and who knows where that could lead us.
Okay, Sarah, so because it's 2017 and we're doing a political podcast, let's talk about the NFL.
Yeah. Yep, because again, sort of like we alluded to in our previous block, Trump has been tweeting up a storm about professional athletes and the anthem and kneeling and standing and all the things. He hasn't been tweeting about Puerto Rico.
Also, we're not going to talk about this, but Trump, you know, kind of went after Steph Curry, who's in the NBA. Literally everyone loves Steph Curry. Like, people who kick puppies love Steph Curry. Like, people who don't like people love Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no reason for him to be picking these fights.
Yeah, definitely one of the most beloved public figures, yeah. not even just athletes.
Right.
But yeah, so on for some context, so Trump went to a rally in Alabama Friday night.
And there's a whole subplot
there's
here.
There's a whole interesting subplot, and I'm just going to go over it really quick. So Trump has endorsed Luther Strange. First of all, it's very bizarre, or it's out of the ordinary for a sitting president, from what I understand, to endorse someone in a Republican primary.
Right.
They usually just let the party work it out.
Right.
And then, you know, they, of course, endorse the winner of the primary.
Theoretically, they don't have time, right?
One would hope that Trump would have more time for other things, right? Right. So he went to a rally in support of Luther Strange, who, once Jeff Sessions vacated his Senate seat to become attorney general, the governor of Alabama appointed Luther Strange, and there's a whole subplot with that because the governor ended up having to resign over a scandal. Anyway, so Luther Strange is quote-unquote the establishment candidate. He's the incumbent, but he hasn't been the incumbent for very long. Right. So there's a special election that they're going to hold at the end of the year to permanently or not
fill
to fill that seat.
Right.
So Luther Strange is the person who's filling it right now. The guy that Luther Strange is running against is actually more Trumpian.
Yes.
Like, they're both dickwads, but
right.
Roy Moore is an even bigger dickwad and very much in the vein of Trump.
Right.
And he's way more extreme
right.
than Luther Strange. And Roy Moore apparently is winning by 8 points.
Which
so that's why they're
lot.
Bringing in Trump. Like, Mitch McConnell is like, Donald Trump, you fucking endorse this guy.
Right.
So anyway, that's a whole subplot. So during that rally, Trump just went the fuck off on basically Colin Kaepernick.
Yes.
And for those who might not be aware, although you probably are, Colin Kaepernick was the one who started this kneeling during the anthem.
Right.
And it's important to note, it is not a protest of the anthem.
No.
It is a protest pushing back on police violence and in support of Black Lives Matter.
Right, right.
So
also, Colin Kaepernick is an amazing quarterback, and
should have a job. Right
was
now.
Leading the Niners when they went to the Super Bowl. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
but he's definitely is someone who is talented enough to be in the NFL.
Right.
But after a year of doing these protests, Colin Kaepernick is out of a job.
Yeah, he's basically blacklisted.
No NFL owner will hire him, essentially,
right.
And it's not a surprise that most NFL owners are old white men.
That is true.
So that's a whole thing. So anyway, Trump basically called Colin Kaepernick a son of a bitch.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't remember what exactly he said, but like he said that, you know, people who kneel during the anthem, like that person is a son of a bitch.
Like, it's a son of a bitch off the field.
And they should be fired.
Yeah.
Again, calling for a firing of a private citizen.
Again. Oh, yeah. I almost forgot.
Right. So because he did that with, or his administration did that with Jemele Hill.
Right.
Yeah. So I think he said, get that son of the bitch off the field right now. He's out. He's fired. He's fired.
And then the owner that does that will be super popular was right. basically his thesis.
Was basically what he said. Again, Colin Kaepernick, because he's like a trailblazer, is the one sort of being punished.
Right, right.
But it hasn't sort of stopped these protests.
Right.
And I think if, and we will get into it, but this weekend we saw a sort of groundswell of support.
Absolutely. And I just, quick reminder, Trump said that the white supremacists marching in Charlottesville had some, quote, good people among them.
I think he said like very fine people.
Very fine people.
Yeah. So people marching amongst white nationalists, he will say some of them are very right. fine people, but someone doing a peaceful protest,
right.
kneeling during the anthem, that's a son of a bitch.
Exactly.
And I will just say, be the Mama Kaepernick you want to see in the world, because she replied to Jemele Smith's tweet about it and said, guess that makes me a proud son of a bitch.
Yes.
Which I was like, yes, Mama yes. Kaepernick.
Right? And speaking of Jemele Smith, there's a very long thread that he wrote. But it really sums up the biggest issues with Trump's remarks about the NFL protest. And he wrote it so beautifully and better than I could ever hope to explain it. So stay with me. I'm going to read it because I really think it's worth hearing.
Yeah.
So Jemele Smith, quote, "The kneeling was about police violence and other forms of systemic racism. Trump clearly wants it to be about him. For a number of reasons. For one, Trump has a vested political interest in uniting whatever people think of as, quote, America with his persona, autocratic to the core. Trump is also an agent of chaos, as per his reckless tweets about North Korea. He wants to stir shit up and be known as the shit stirrer. If Trump can inspire a boycott of the NFL, a boys club that wouldn't let him in once upon a time, while sowing racial division, Yahtzee. When Trump keeps failing to realize in all arenas is that the truth comes out. Increased protest equals increased attention to the cause. Perhaps Trump thinks that by making the protests about him, that obscures Kaepernick's original purpose. I see the opposite happening. Trump calling more attention to the protests will only help the real message get out. They are protesting systemic racism, not the flag.
Right.
Even if Trump succeeds in making their protests about him, well, he's an avatar of systemic racism. He brings attention to his own actions. Trump's narcissism is useful here. He's a duly elected representative of the very malignancies that protesting players seek to illuminate. Trump is provoking more to protest the very racism he embodies. See why Bruce Maxwell did so last night at in the Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and he's actually a rookie
yes.
for the Oakland A's, yes. which is pretty significant.
Yes. Glad that a baseball player did this at last, but every athlete protest matters because they engage stadium crowds, which are mostly white. Sporting events are the only time during the week when many Americans ever deal with or pay meaningful attention to what black people do. White fans, once in the stadium, are a captive audience, especially in the NFL where tickets go for the price of mortgage payments. Trump erred by calling for a walkout. I can see fans booing or even staging counter demonstrations at a tailgate, but walking out? Nope. White fans who stay will, if I'm right, be witness to protests at levels heretofore unseen. Perhaps a few may be kneeling themselves. The key is that the players know that this may be the only time in this narrowed media universe when folks are forced to confront racism. That's one reason why Ben Sasse, an actual senator, is so wrong-headed here.
And just to interrupt for a quick second. So if you didn't see Ben yes. Sasse's tweet, he basically was like, surely there's another way to peacefully protest.
Right.
It's like, no. Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah.
Oh, no, you don't, because Great. You're just uncomfortable.
Right.
And like, there's a whole thing, like, you know, I feel like people of color are often told you should be protesting peacefully. And then when they do.
Right. It's like, oh, not now.
There's like the goalpost move. And all of a sudden there's all these other problems.
Right.
It's like, no, it's not actually about the protest. It's right. about you feeling uncomfortable about what the message is. Right.
Exactly.
So that's just a little context for Ben Sasse.
Right. So one of many, many reasons Ben Sasse is wrongheaded. Sasse suggests that NFL players protest some other time than during the anthem. When else during the game are they supposed to do it? What Ben Sasse fails to realize is that Trump isn't baiting us into a fight. The fight has been here. Folks like Ben Sasse have ignored it. Protesting during the anthem was a masterstroke by Colin Kaepernick, even if it cost him his career. Trump only confirms that.
You know, this isn't the kneeling during the anthem, taking a knee is not some general Trump resistance.
No.
And I think us white people really need to push back on that and to understand that. Yes, if Trump, you know, sort of bringing more attention to it galvanizes people.
It's useful.
And I think it only validates the need for that protest. But I think us white people need to recognize this isn't like a Trump resistance thing. This is a protest against police brutality, and it's in support of Black Lives Matter. So just, I would say that's an important thing to note. And I will also add that WNBA players have long been engaged in these types of protests, and they haven't always gotten the headlines or recognition for it.
Sure.
But yeah, it is notable that the first Major League Baseball player participated, as Jamil had noted. I also think it's really interesting, and this is something that's real. So the NFL didn't start bringing out players for the national anthem until 2009.
Yeah.
So this wasn't a thing that, A, it wasn't a thing they've always done, and B, it's basically for corporate reasons.
Yeah.
So the Department of the Defense and or the National Guard partnered with the NFL and paid them millions of dollars for quote-unquote patriotic displays before and during games, and that was with the explicit purpose to help them recruit for the military. And I think Bob Costas, who's a famous sportscaster, he talked about, he had some commentary about how the national anthem and the flag is often only associated with support for the military, and that's wrong, and that's not nuanced.
Right.
Everyone supports the sacrifice that members of the military have made. Whether you agree with war or not, I think everyone supports the sacrifice that the people that have joined the military have made. And again, it's not a protest of the anthem or necessarily the flag. It's a protest of police brutality and racism, and again, in support of Black Lives Matter. And I think that people want to make patriotism about like these surface level things that don't actually highlight patriotism.
Yeah, people are always surprised when I say I'm very patriotic.
Well, yeah, and we've talked about this on the show about how the right has sort of tried to own patriotism.
Right. I'm like, nope, can't have it.
And it has led to this fetishization of the flag.
Right.
And I think that's also a problem. There's actually a viral thread that went around on Twitter. This user at Koopa underscore K-I-N-T-E said, quote, "Since disrespecting the flag is still the narrative being used, this courtesy of the U.S. flag code chapter 10. So he went through this whole thread about various ways that people are right now disrespecting the flag. If you want to talk about disrespecting the flag,
let's talk about all of the
various ways that we are actually disrespecting the flag. And it's like the flag should never be carried flat or horizontally, but always aloft and free. And then you see all these like pictures and stadiums of them holding the flag.
Right.
Like the flag should never be used for wearing apparel, bedding, or drapery. Of course, we see that all over the place.
Time.
So if you want to have a conversation about disrespecting the flag,
let's have it.
Let's talk about that.
Right.
And the fact that there are plenty of ways we quote unquote disrespect the flag.
Right.
But that's not what this is about.
Not even a little bit. So now that we know what happened, let's like take a deeper look at the cause, what their cause was about.
Yeah.
So police brutality and systemic racism.
Right.
So Washington Post has a database of all police shootings in 2015, 2016, and 2017.
Yeah, they started it in 2015.
Yeah, they won the Pulitzer Prize for it.
Yes.
It's actually an amazing visual resource and really amazing reporting.
And we'll link to it in our show notes.
Oh, yeah. I definitely suggest you check it out. So a couple of like points here. So in 2017, 721 people have been shot and killed by the police. One quarter of those incidents involved someone with a mental illness. More than half were people of color. And 52 of those people were shot were unarmed or had a toy weapon of some sort. So this is just the tip of the iceberg. And like I said, you should go. They have all these different filters and you can explore the data. And it is really a powerful piece of journalism. And I highly recommend going to see it.
Yeah. And also, there was a Vanity Fair article that's also worth looking into. Again, we'll link to it in our show notes. So it looks at this raw data from the Washington Post and then gives other sort of contextual sources that really illuminate the issue of race and police brutality and subsequent fatalities.
Yeah.
So a couple of key points. So there was a study by a UC Davis professor. Devin is a proud Aggie. And this professor found evidence of significant bias in the killing of unarmed Black Americans relative to unarmed white Americans, in that the probability of being Black, unarmed, and shot by police is about close to 3.5 times the probability of being white, unarmed, and shot by police. And this is on average.
Yes.
So this is just like affirming things we know. But right. I think it's also helpful to have the data.
Yes.
So when you're talking to people, you can say, this is actually what it says.
Right. There's a lot of really interesting context. The Vanity Fair article is worth an entire read.
Yeah.
Another interesting point, quote, the only thing that was significant in predicting whether someone was shot and killed by police was unarmed was whether or not they were black.
Mm-hmm.
Crime variables did not matter in terms of predicting whether the person was killed and unarmed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then also they go into sort of racial profiling and how people are stopped. And it's a very in-depth look at this data.
Yeah. And I think too, another important point is that, the punishments have not fit the crime.
Right.
There's too many police officers who are killing, black people for no reason and are getting off.
Absolutely.
And so that's obviously another big thing. And I think, you know, the people who are more offended by someone kneeling than by the fact that black people are being killed and it's a systemic issue, I think that's the problem. Like, you need to be angrier about the systemic issue, not about the person who's protesting. And, you know, protesting is supposed to make people uncomfortable.
Yeah,
it's supposed to start a conversation. I think it was at the New York City branch of the ACLU that said, like, I can't remember what their tweet said. It was perfect, though. And they had a picture of Colin Kaepernick kneeling. But it was like, if peaceful protests didn't, you know, elicit basically a call for change and didn't make people uncomfortable, then it wouldn't be as powerful.
Right.
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 So, yeah, we really wanted to talk about that. Again, I think there were a lot of people galvanized.
Yes, which is great.
When you saw across the NFL, there was, you know, at least over 100 players who I think participated.
Yeah.
There's also a debate about the locking arms versus taking a kneel. And
yeah.
from what I can gather, the locking arms for certain people is kind of a cop out.
Yeah.
It's like, nope, take the knee. That's the protest.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Right.
But.
Well, and Donald Trump said, locking arms is fine. Kneeling is disrespectful.
So did he say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, don't listen to that. Like, well, I will say, yeah. Like,
yes.
Don't follow Trump's lead.
But not even a little bit.
But yeah, I think this is an issue that merits continued attention.
Yes.
And it is very disturbing to have a president that, like Jameel Smith said, is so emblematic, is basically the cardboard cutout of a person who symbolizes so much institutionalized racism. Okay, Devin, so let's get into our gratitude check, which we always love to do.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you grateful for today?
Well, I was having a really hard time coming up with, like, a positive political story, and this whole kind of past week has been super depressing. So I was like, yeah, fuck it. I'm going to do something personal, you know, more personal today.
Yeah.
So I've been reading Hillary Clinton's book, like we've been talking about, and it has been filling me with feelings.
I know.
Like, feelings.
I know.
So good ones, bad ones, uncomfortable ones, you know, kind of facing some things that maybe I didn't want to face, especially that I wasn't really that involved in her campaign.
Mm.
Like, that really, you know, that really hit me. I was like, wow, I was really uninvolved.
Mm.
And that's horrible. You know, I sobbed through the entire section on gun safety and Sandy Hook and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even keep that in my mind too close because it'll make me cry right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I cheered for her retelling of great victories during the campaign and cried when she read part of her victory speech that she never gave. So
that part got me.
Yeah. So, but the thing is something else is kind of happening with reading this book. And another Hellion in the Facebook group was talking about, you know, having a physical copy of what happened with her at work. And she said that it made her like stronger and more confident in some ways, just having it.
Well, it's kind of a symbol of, you know, there have been so many men mostly who have been telling Hillary Clinton to shut up and go away.
Right.
And so like a copy of her book almost signifies, I don't want her to shut up and go away. And I don't want women to shut up and go away. Because when people say Hillary Clinton needs to shut up and go away, they're also kind of saying that the people who supported her and, you know, who backed her and, you know, who really were among the people that wanted her leadership, that we should shut up.
Right.
And it's kind of like a middle finger to
that. Exactly. Exactly. And I realized that I was kind of feeling the same way. And a few Hellions in the group in response to this quoted E. Cummings, one of my favorite poems, quote, I carry your heart with me. I carry it in my heart.
Yes.
And that's just sort of part of it. And it's like reading about this strong woman and being surrounded by them and leaning on my in-person community and this digital one that we've built has just made me a more confident person.
Yeah.
And I feel shored up in ways that I haven't felt before.
Yes. Love it.
Hillary talks a lot about how she didn't break that highest, hardest glass ceiling, but that she knows that someone will and that she intends to vote for that person in her lifetime. And
if they're a Democrat, she said.
Yeah. She even said, she's like, they have to earn my vote.
Yeah.
If I agree with their principles, I look forward to voting for
them. But we want a woman up there.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't want to run for president because that dream evaporated when I was 4 and my mom told me that I probably couldn't be the president during the week and a waitress like my mom on the weekends.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I was like, well, fuck that.
Oh, man.
But I want to make a difference. And it feels like Hillary Clinton is in my corner. Like she might not know who I am, but I know that like she's rooting for me in this larger sense. And, you know, it's not just her that she acknowledges that. She was the candidate and the voice. She was not the whole movement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she was backed by women. She backs women. And I feel like she's in my corner because everyone who wanted her to win are also there and whispering that while we lost, we didn't lose.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just been feeling really shored up by that recently. So.
I know. Her book, I mean, we'll get into this more on our bonus Patreon podcast, but her book has been more inspiring than sad for me.
Yeah, me too.
Like I haven't, I mean, I think obviously we would be better off if she were president. That's
right.
That's for me pretty obvious, but she just continues to inspire me because she keeps getting up.
She keeps getting up.
Keeps getting up.
Every morning.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. So, okay, Sarah, so what are you grateful for?
So, yeah, I actually will. The first thing I'm grateful for is political.
Yeah,
and
always.
It is LeBron James calling Donald Trump a bum.
So good.
Like, I think someone on Twitter, I can't remember who, was like, that's my new political affiliation.
Right.
Like, my new party is just LeBron James calling Donald Trump a bum. And for those who might not have seen it, although you probably did, it got retweeted a shit ton. He called Trump a bum after Trump sort of disinvited Steph Curry, who Steph Curry was like, I wasn't even going to go anyway.
I wasn't going to go,
And P.S., then the Warriors, like, a couple hours later, released a team statement and said that they were all not going to go to the White House,
right.
And instead they were going to use their trip to DC constructively to like help spread their values of like diversity and compassion. I just thought that was like a great fuck you.
It was a great fuck you.
And someone else on Twitter was also like, the Warriors should instead go to Chappaqua and visit Hillary Clinton
like
and give
out
her a 45 jersey.
Yes,
and I think this is my own sort of edit.
Mm-hmm.
If they give her a 45 jersey, the letters on the back, it shouldn't say like Hillary or Clinton. It just should say should have been and then 45.
Oh, so good.
Just an idea, Warriors.
Just an idea.
I would love that if like teams just decided that they're going to go to visit Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton.
That's amazing.
And just be like, fuck you.
Fuck you. Well, yeah, that's really great. Also, I saw a tweet saying like, this must really hurt Trump's feelings because he has always wanted to be loved by celebrities and LeBron James is this huge celebrity.
Yeah. I think it kills him inside.
Oh yeah.
And I think, there's a whole psychology, but like, I don't even give a fuck about Trump's feelings. I just like love LeBron James.
I know. Being, so good.
Calling him a bum. But the second thing I'm grateful for is personal.
Yes.
I'm so fucking grateful to you, Devin.
Aww.
This is why I did not put this in the outline. I was like, I'm going to fucking surprise you. Surprise, bitch. But I'm so grateful to you because you hellions, you've heard me say I don't feel 100%. Me not feeling 100% means that I can't read for very long and therefore I can't do the outline. Like Devin has done all of our outlines for like the past fucking month, and including like when the guest hosts were on, for the most part, and it's a beast. And she's also been taking care of a lot of like sort of hellbent like operations behind the scenes, like lots of stuff, lots of exciting things are happening for us. And she's been like handling that like a motherfucking boss. So I'm just really grateful to you for picking up my slack and never making me feel guilty for taking care of myself. Like I read one article continuously today and that's like the most I've been able to do.
Yeah.
So I'm just really appreciative for you. Like you are my village, man.
Thank you.
And I'm just really glad we can be there for each other sort of partners in this podcast and friends.
That's totally true.
So yeah, I'm really grateful to you.
Thank you.
And you've done an amazing job.
Thank you. That's really fantastic to hear. And I also want to say that I am so happy to have you as my partner and friend.
Yeah.
And I understand, you know, your pain, and I don't want to add to that. And so I'm happy to do it.
Love you.
Love you. Okay, Sarah, so now that I'm done crying, we're back.
I'm going to take a crying break.
Yeah, a little bit. So it is Dickwad of the Week time, and we have a couple of doozies.
Yep. These are co-losers.
Yeah, I was, you know, doing it. I was like, I will not give either one of these people dishonorable mention.
They're on the same sort of level right now. Yeah, so our first Dickwad of the Week is Betsy DeVos.
Yes.
Betsy DeVos. So as you might know, she's the Secretary of Education. And this week, sort of as we were talking about in some of our Patreon bonus podcasts, there was indications that she would roll back an Obama-era rule on a directive on campus rape. And she fucking did.
She fucking did it.
Because it's almost like she works for an admitted sexual assaulter.
What the fuck is that?
Mm-hmm.
I like, honestly, if we were going to pick a loser, it'd be Betsy.
Yeah, but I mean... Tom Price.
We'll get into it.
Spoiler alert.
It's Tom Price.
The other dickwad is Tom Price. And we'll get into why they're both on the same level.
Yeah.
So just for some context. So during the Obama era, protections were put in place on college campuses in an attempt to fight sexual assault in universities, because it's been a huge fucking problem.
Right. And then make the process easier for
victims. Yeah. Because as we know, as we've seen statistics, the people who commit sexual assault don't tend to get punished for it.
Right.
And that sort of
what these
lends into victim blaming narratives and victims feeling nervous about coming forward and sort of like the emotional toll it takes on victims. So there's a whole thing about that. So the directives changed the standards of evidence proving guilt of accused rapists on campus, on campuses that receive federal funding. And it also imposed a strict 60-day time frame in which to resolve cases. So this is the new rule.
No, this is the Obama rule.
This is the Obama rule.
It changed the evidence standards.
Gotcha.
So, you know, what
there
evidence
was allowed.
There
was a lower preponderance
of evidence. And then also put a strict 60-day time frame on wrapping up these cases.
Gotcha. So now under DeVos, campuses can use a much higher standard of evidence, mm-hmm. and they don't have to resolve the cases within a 60-day time frame. I also believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard this, that it also allows the people who are accused of sexual assault from sort of cross-examining the people that accuse them.
You're also right. Those are just the two.
Which is really, really, really harmful
yes.
in so many ways.
Yes.
And I think will lead to more victims feeling nervous about
coming forward. Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just like a hot fucking dumpster fire.
It is.
And, like, again, I just want to say elections have motherfucking consequences. Say what you will about Hillary Clinton. Right. I don't give a fuck.
Right.
She would not have nominated someone to be education secretary who would undo these rules.
No.
There's no fucking way.
No fucking
so,
way.
So, yeah, Betsy DeVos is one of our dickwads of the week.
Yes.
Devin, who's our next dickwad?
All right, so we kind of spoiled it, but it's Tom fucking Price.
Yeah.
And I really fucking hate Tom Price.
He is a shady motherfucker.
He's a shady motherfucker. But it was actually even hard for me to get too worked up over this story because Betsy fucking DeVos had to go full Leviathan on us, which, hey, Supernatural fans, you know what I mean.
That would not be me.
That would not be you. No idea. So it's kind of maybe a testament to how far these goalposts have moved. And, like, what we get mad about.
And also, I will say, we sort of talked about this. Like, these stories, they've been getting some attention,
right.
certainly, but not as much as they might in other administrations.
Right.
Because this whole fucking Trump presidency is a hot fucking dumpster fire.
Exactly. So, Tom Price has racked up over $400,000 of private jet travel charges since taking office earlier this year.
Yeah, and that's like going places from like Philadelphia to DC.
Yeah, where like, you can get a ticket for like $100.
You don't have to charter a jet to do this.
So all of his predecessors flew commercial, so I think he might just be allergic to commercial flight.
Well, and it's also just so fucking galling because he's the Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Right.
Meanwhile, congressional Republicans are trying to take our goddamn healthcare away and phase out Medicaid.
Because it's too expensive.
But that's too expensive, but you can take motherfucking charter flights.
Yeah.
Like, fuck off.
Fuck you. So I also, this is how he justified it. And I'm not making this up.
This is such bullshit.
This is fucking real. So according to his assistant secretary for public affairs, quote, "This is Secretary Price getting outside of D.C., making sure he's connected with the real American people. Wasting 4 hours at an airport and having the secretary cancel his event is not a good use of taxpayer money. Please shut the fuck up."
Well, can I also note that if he really wanted to connect with American people, being stuck in an airport for 4 hours right. is a great way to do it.
Right? Like,
meet all kinds of people.
Airport waiting is such a bitch.
Also, like, yes. when you're on a commercial flight, you would be meeting
you
more
could
people.
Meet people.
So if that's your excuse, it doesn't even hold up in this sort of mock Judge Judy court that I've that I have assembled.
Also, if you're going to be a shitty person, I've said this before, own it. Be the best shitty person you can be and just be like, yeah, I don't like commercial flights.
Yeah, because I'm like elitist dickwad
yeah.
and I'm wasting your fucking taxpayer
yeah.
money.
I would have more respect for that, honestly.
So yeah, so two secretaries in the Trump administration are our dickwads of the week. So I think it really, again, highlights how, you know, the problem with Republican or at least conservative Republican
yeah.
politics isn't just Trump.
Right.
It's all these people who are enabling him, all these people in his administration, and certainly in Congress
right.
who are trying to fuck us over.
Okay, Sarah, so last but not least, let's get into some action items. So things that our Hellions can do after they listen to the show. What's up first?
Yeah, so as you probably know, healthcare is still up in the air.
Right.
There's allegedly going to be a vote this week. Apparently, they've changed the bill again,
yeah.
like last Sunday, or this, so yesterday, this
yeah.
past Sunday. And it's even shittier than it was before, which was already a pile of fucking turds.
yeah, kind of impressed that they could make it worse. Like, yeah. okay.
Good job, Republicans. So in the interim between our Thursday show and now, John McCain went full John McCain
yeah.
on Friday and said he couldn't in good conscience vote for this flaming trash heap of a bill. But that doesn't mean the fight is over.
Right.
Because Rand Paul was a no, and Susan Collins is a lean no. We don't know what's happening with Murkowski.
Right.
They're trying to bribe her, and I think now trying to bribe Susan Collins. Essentially, they're trying to bribe, from what I understand, they're
yeah.
trying to bribe Alaska with Obamacare, and
yeah.
the rest of us get fucked over.
Yes.
Which really just reveals how shitty the bill is.
Right?
And like, what?
Like, are you kidding?
So don't let up. Keep calling your representatives, even
yeah.
if they're Democrats.
Yeah.
Steal their spines. Make sure, you know, people like Chris Murphy's like, I've got 100 amendments ready
yeah.
for a Votorama. Like,
right.
let's go.
Let's do it.
So the healthcare fight is not over. Keep calling your reps. TrumpCareToolkit.org is still a great resource for getting in touch with swing senators on this vote. Also, I believe the Indivisible Guide has like a dialing tool that helps
yes.
you call people in red states to remind them to call their senators.
Right. We'll link to all that in the show notes.
We'll link to it in the show notes. You could probably find it on Indivisible Guide.
Yeah.
So yeah, healthcare, keep your eyes on the ball there.
Right.
And then also we have an action item related to Puerto Rico. And I will also say on top of, we're going to tell you to donate to a couple places, but call your reps about Puerto Rico.
Yes.
And make sure they're talking about it.
Right. And that, you know, we need to light the fire and get them like
pushing the
right.
federal government.
Right. Exactly. Like, let's throw some urgency on it. So there are a couple of places that you can donate to Puerto Rico relief efforts. The first one is Diasporicans. And it has information on where to donate, what to donate, and how to donate. And they have collection centers all over the U.S. and also talk about other organizations that need donations. So you can visit diasporicans.com to help out. And I'll link to it in the show notes so, you know, y'all have it. And then HuffPost actually compiled a great list of credible places you can donate to help with Puerto Rico. And again, we'll link to all of these in the show notes. But a few good ones are UNICEF, Global Giving, United for Puerto Rico, Students with Puerto Rico, and UNIDOS, a hurricane relief fund for Hurricane Maria victims in Puerto Rico. So those are all great places to donate.
Okay, so as usual, lots going on.
I feel like we say that every episode.
It's true every
it's true.
Episode. It's true every day of every week. So yeah, just make sure that you're staying active, staying engaged, take care of yourself so that you are equipped for the fight in the long term.
Yes.
I also think, too, this is sort of my little side tangent.
Yeah.
I think it's important to constantly recognize when Trump is acting abnormal, which
right.
is often.
Right.
Because as we talked about sort of with Carlos Maza a couple months back, it's the Democratic backsliding that can happen
right.
is enabled by the fact that the changes happen so gradually
right.
that you don't even recognize when yeah. sort of democracy is in the rear view mirror.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are stories that I'll read and will literally just go meh and shrug my shoulders. That should not be stories that I'm shrugging my shoulders at.
I do that too. And like even, you know, the stuff that Trump has been saying about or people in his administration have been saying about people like Jemele Hill, like Colin Kaepernick,
right.
you know, in the rally on Friday, Trump also, you know, evoked sort of lock her up and
right.
saying like Jeff Sessions was going to look into Hillary Clinton.
Right.
I'm like, I had to tweet this for myself because I was like threatening to jail or prosecute a political opponent
right.
or a former political opponent is so fucking bonkers.
Yes.
It never stops being bonkers.
Right.
And I think the fact that we're all, or a lot of us, shrug sometimes
yeah.
because we're so used to Trump being like this
yeah.
is a problem.
It is so a problem.
I will say, maybe this is a mini action item too, but just stay vigilant with yourself and
yes.
remind yourself how abnormal things are.
Yes.
Because I think that will equip us too in the fight.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So that is it for us. We will be back here on Thursday. So stay tuned and thank you for listening.
And as Hillary Clinton says in her book, What Happened? Don't let the bastards get you down.
For more information on today's episode, please visit our website at www.hellbentpodcast.com. You'll find the articles we've discussed as well as additional resources.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HellbentPod, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/HellbentPodcast. We also have a fan group called Dickwads Be Gone, which you can find on Facebook.
Please listen on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just like the rules of feminism. We also have a Patreon, and you can find us at patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive content, mini podcasts, and behind-the-scenes looks at the making of Hellbent.